It's October 20th, 2016, and today Chris McQuinn of Drinkbox joins me on the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. Welcome to the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. I am Drew Messenger Michaels. Thanks for being here. So, I'm talking to Chris McQuinn of Drinkbox Games. You might know his previous work, the studio's previous work, Mutant Blobs Attack, or Guacamelee. Most recently, they made Severed, which at the time I was talking to Chris was about to come out on 3DS, now is out on 3DS, as well as Wii U, iOS, and PlayStation Vita. You might notice those are all things with touch interfaces, because it is indeed a touch-based game. It's sort of... is part of the mission of the game to prove that touch-based experiences don't have to be shallow or don't have to suck. The combat is sort of like Punch-Out with a touch interface, which doesn't sound like a great idea until you try it. And then you realize, oh man, this is like really tactile and hectic, and the parts where it is potentially less straightforward or less easy than it would be with buttons actually feel kind of hectic in a correct way. I like the game a lot. We get into some of the design thoughts behind it and some of the thematic underpinnings and things like that. It's a good conversation. I'm excited for you to hear it. I should mention it ends in a strange place. I ask Chris, hey, what kind of questions do you wish people would ask you about your games? And then we lose the interview because Skype is a harsh mistress. But his answer was basically going to be, I wish people would ask me the kind of stuff you've been asking. So the rest of the interview still sort of serves as an answer to that question. We're not going to let Skype stand in the way of this one coming to you, the good people. So without further ado, here is Chris McQuinn of Drinkbox Games. Enjoy. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy right now, so appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. We're quasi-busy right now.
Well, as we were setting this up, it came up that you're working on the 3DS version of the game, right, which we can talk about. So I know that's got to be a non-trivial effort.
That's true. I mean, although at this point we... Okay, let me check my dates right. Anyways, at this point, we've kind of submitted everything, so now it's really just waiting for it to go through.
I think a lot of people who are listening to this probably are newly familiar with what that process looks like, which, we just jumped into it, which is cool. But there was that thing that Rami Ishmael wrote kind of recently about, he used No Man's Sky kind of as a jumping off point, but talking about why day one patches are a thing and what certification is like, which are things that if you've never developed a game and especially never done one for console, you may know nothing about, but are things that are kind of integral to how games get made or more to the point finished, right?
Yeah, it's weird the pacing of when things are crazy and when things are not so crazy.
Sure, they're never not crazy, but sometimes they're less crazy.
Yeah, definitely, especially when submission happens. And then at that point, there's still a lot of marketing and whatnot for a few people at the office. But I mean, everyone else at that point is kind of rolling on to things not so urgent.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you very, very much for being here, Chris McQuinn, Drinkbox Studios.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
So I've been really loving the game, first of all, Severed. And yes. Before we get into why I really like it and why I think other people might like it, I think it's useful to ask this question. How would you describe Severed to somebody who doesn't know what it is? Maybe who's familiar with your previous, blob and non-blob related work, Mutant Blobs Attack and Guacamelee and all that, but who has no idea what Severed is? How would you describe it?
Sure. Okay. So Severed is definitely a departure from our previous games, and I would say, so Severed is a touch-based combat dungeon crawler. So essentially what happens is you play as a warrior named Sasha, and you're trying to figure out where your family's gone. So that's introduced right at the beginning of the game. Something's happened to your family, you're not sure, and you move between... You search for them in this really weird, fantastical world, and you move between nodes looking for them, kind of in the old vein of classic dungeon crawlers. So the Eye of the Beholder or if people are familiar with those way back in the day, those D&D games on the PC. And
even if you're sort of out in the open, it's still kind of tile based or room based, right?
Definitely.
You move through discrete screens.
Yeah, so there's discrete screens, and some of the environments are on the outside, like you had mentioned, and you're in forests, and sometimes you're in buildings, and you can go up floors and down floors. And the real part of the game that stands out, I would say, is the combat. And so what happens is within a node, you can fight enemies. So they could surround you, and when you fight them, all the combat's done by touching a screen or having some sort of screen input, whether that's a stylus or your finger, it depends on the device. And you can imagine it as a sort of weird combination of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, where different enemies will have different patterns, and you'll have to figure out what these patterns are, and sometimes they'll swipe at you. And depending the motion of their attack, you will have to touch on screen or with the stylus, opposing the direction of the attack. So you really have to parry, and it matters where you you touch on screen. And they'll also have vulnerabilities. And so you'll figure out when they're vulnerable, and then you'll have to swipe on screen in a certain direction to make the attack stick or to avoid their armor. Yeah, and so that's pretty much Severed in a long nutshell.
It's a good nutshell. And it's like the it sounds like it can get complicated, which it does in practice, but the way that you introduce the number of mechanics that are in play in the game is really elegant. Because I think Mike Tyson's Punch-Out is a good point of comparison, but it's almost like, you know, Glass Joe is in front of you, and at the same time, you know Piston Hondo is behind you. Like, it's multiple Punch-Out fights at once. You know, it's the same puzzle fighting thing where you have to know your enemy or your opponent, but it's really kind of a fun challenge to sort of juggle. You know, when you have a different enemy on each of the four sort of cardinal sides of you, you know, quickly switching between them, noticing which one's going to attack you soon, and then quickly remembering the tells and the directions and stuff like that for each one is just like a really satisfying and often quite hectic, experience.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well. I mean, initially you'll fight just a single enemy, and that gives you the feel for how do you attack and how do you parry. But then, like you said, we'll add additional enemies. So sometimes it becomes almost a puzzle to enemy management. And so we provide the player tools later on to, let's say you're facing one enemy and you have a tool to keep them distracted. And so you can turn to face another enemy, and then you can deal with them in a certain way, and then maybe face a third enemy in another direction, and then kind of go back to the initial enemy. So you're sort of juggling enemies. So you can almost imagine the old kung fu movies where you'll get four people surrounding one guy, and he kind of deals with them all around simultaneously. And that's kind of sort of a feeling we wanted to provide for Severed.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I definitely get that. I feel like Zatoichi or whatever when I'm getting it right. You know, I feel like I've, you know, extrasensorily gotten everything exactly the way it needed to get. It reminds me, and you know, I mean, this is a tired comparison, but an apt one for a game like Severed. It reminds me of when you do a really good run in one of the Souls games as well.
Right.
Just in that, you know, it's a situation that you could reasonably be prepared for, but you're not always prepared the first time. And then when you execute on it, especially the first time, but even on a subsequent attempt, you feel it's a very earned victory. And probably my favorite thing about it is the game, like you said, makes you divide your attention among several enemies, but it also pretty explicitly rewards you for focusing on one enemy, at least for a discrete period of time, with the focus system that lets you build up these combos to get items, basically, right? Enemy body parts that you use for upgrades at the end of the fight. That requires you to focus on one guy, but you can't focus too long because then you'll get hounded by the others. So it's this really great thing where you have to focus on an enemy precisely as long as you need to, and ideally not a second longer.
Yeah, the focus meter is this weird push-pull system where, you know, you do want to focus. So yeah, like you mentioned, you focus on an enemy, which means if you're successfully landing attacks or successfully parrying an enemy, you get this meter that increases. And as the meter increases, you start doing more damage. And when it maxes out, you're just doing a ton of damage. And most importantly, when you kill an enemy and the meter is full, they go into a severed state, which is where the name is from for the game. And when they're in the severed state, you can slice off their limbs. And like you said, the limbs become currency.
Mm-hmm. Which is great and macabre and wonderful. And, you know, the Souls comparison was on my mind mostly because when I was playing, my wife and I were playing together. And nice. She said, like, the aesthetic, it reminded her of, like, an all-ages Bloodborne, almost, with the obsession with, like, body parts as currency and all that stuff. And just the alienness of the world and the fact that the enemies are these kind of mashed-together monstrosities of faces and body parts and stuff like that. But it's not outwardly gory in the same way Bloodborne is. It's more just... You know, it is horrifying sometimes, right? Like, there's imagery in there that's definitely freaky, but it's freaky in a much more, I don't know, stylized is not quite the word I mean, right? But it looks very much like a game you guys made. It looks a bit like Guacamelee in terms of the way the animation looks and the use of big blocks of beautiful flat color and stuff like that. But it's all kind of in service of making the world, it seems to me, feel alien, you know, which is cool.
Thanks. I mean, the intention was to create just an interesting world, right? I mean, you want to do what you can to do something different, and I think it's fun for at least the artists and the team at Drinkbox to try something different because it's just more interesting, right? We definitely could have gone a safer route with regards to art style or what the enemies look like, but. I think it's just more fun, and I think people kind of enjoy it, or we hope they do at least. I don't know.
I mean, I can tell you that I have been enjoying it a great deal. I can tell you my wife's been enjoying it. Everybody I've talked to personally who's played it likes it a lot. Everyone I know who's played it has played it on Wii U, interestingly.
Right.
But that's not the only platform it's out for, right? It's going to be out for 3DS, and it's also out, or going to be, on iOS. Correct me if I'm wrong there.
It is out on iOS. Sorry. I think you mentioned it all. Okay. Let's see. Okay. I
didn't mean to fluster you. It's like the platforms are different enemies surrounding you in a corridor and you have to.
They are. I was actually looking up, the release calendar, our release calendar. Cause I know we have some it's been released and we have a release date for something else. And I'm trying to figure out what I can say and not say, but, what I do know it's released for. Yes. Is, it's for the PS Vita and then, the Wii U and the 3DS and sorry, the Wii U in North America. And in Europe, it's the Wii U and 3DS. And we have iOS, which came out between all of that.
The Vita is what I forgot. And it was not a meta commentary on how everyone forgets the Vita.
That's a meta commentary. Yeah,
it might be.
So we're just waiting on the 3DS for North America, which will be very, very soon.
Very cool, very cool. And it's got that that thing that not enough Nintendo games have these days, or Nintendo system games have, with cross-buy, right? If you buy the Wii U version, you get the 3DS version and vice versa?
Correct. It is cross-buy.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I think we were pretty happy to making that happen.
It's definitely a game where, you know, as I play through, I'm getting better. And so the idea of a second playthrough... you know, I have not completed it yet, full disclosure, so I don't know about, you know, any new game plus or things like that. But the idea of just picking it up from scratch again with the sort of skills that I have now is very appealing. So that lends itself well to, you know, multiple platforms.
I mean, you know, it's interesting, and I've played Severed on every platform that we've made it for. And they all have pros and cons. It's interesting. They all have a very different feel. And you know, I have a personal preference, I think, at this point.
Are you willing to say what it is, or is that prejudicial?
No, it's fine. I don't really care.
Okay.
So I think my favorite way to play it actually right now is on the Wii U. Just because I can play it and I can push it to the screen or to the TV, sorry. So it's kind of nice when other people can watch me play.
Yeah. I've been doing it as a de facto co-op experience too, right? And it's pretty cool that way.
Yeah, it's totally a co-op. It's a very fake co-op experience. It's sort of the best way to do it, actually.
I mean, for multiple reasons, right? Because the person who is not currently holding the controller notices stuff on the map or around that the person who is deep in it might not. And then also because, you know, the jump scares, but like the startling moments when they happen are more startling with another person. But then also because it can get kind of tense and to be able to pass it back and forth and, you know, you're fucking up. Give me the control. You know, those moments are great, too. It's a great co-op experience, you know, whether or not that was how it was originally intended.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I like to say we intended everything, so we sound really smart, but most of the time we didn't intend anything, but it just happens that way.
That was a great summary of all art, basically.
Yeah, essentially. we take advantage. We will obviously take credit for something, although we didn't really mean for it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you guys go through a process of iteration where you see what works and go with that, right? But it's those accidental things, those things that are emergent to a certain degree, are always especially fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure. There is a ton of iteration that goes on, and there's always the moment in any project where we think it's terrible, and it's actually maybe pretty terrible, and we have to pivot pretty hard. I don't think any of our projects haven't had that, but. Yeah, like you said, it's nice when at the end of the day or as the project's finishing up, you see this neat metagame that starts to appear and you say, oh man, that's really neat. We hadn't planned that, but it's working out great.
Sure. So the game is really, really interesting in terms of its overall tone and feel, right? The aesthetic, you know, literally the audiovisual aesthetic and the way it meshes with sort of the aesthetic of the gameplay, that because it is very, very consciously and very, very intentionally old school, you know, as far as being... you know, a faux 3D, you know, grid-based, like you said, you can go up and down stairs, right? But it's you're switching rooms, you know, the map is 3D, but your view of it is not precisely. And yeah. that I think also maybe enhances the alienness or the foreignness or the strangeness of the world. So I guess what I'd like to know is why this combination of things? You know, what was it truly just about, you know, like what kind of crazy world can we make? Or was there something you were trying to get at with this soup of strange distancing and grossing kind of things?
So that's kind of a big question. I think the world itself was intentional from at least a stylistic point, where the original pitch of the game was from Augusto, our animator. And, you know, he wanted to make this story about, he's from Mexico and he lives in Canada now. And it's about missing his family, but he didn't really know how to do that in sort of a real sense. So he had to make it kind of stylistic and sort of weirdly, maybe even his dreams are haunted by being away from his family, like permanently. So I think the style of the game really fit that. So that was intentional through and through. As far as going back to the old school games and getting a feel for that, I think, you know, I think we'd like to go at something sometimes with a new take on it. So we feel that the old school dungeon crawlers hadn't really been addressed too much, and we love those games, but we wanted to take a new stint on it, which is for every node that you go to. So like you said, it's node based. It's actually a giant cylinder that we map the art to, where we pinch in the edges, if this makes sense to someone. So every node, you're actually standing in the center of a hollow cylinder where we've mapped the art. And I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but so if you spin around, you can see, you know, it looks kind of faux 3D. So for us, at least from that point of view, we wanted to take something old that wasn't really addressed, so old school dungeon crawlers, but make it fresh. And so that's where we kind of got this idea of, hey, let's do a dungeon crawler, but do something really cool with it.
No, that really, really comes through. And I mean, at the risk of telling you the theme of your own game, which is not the best way to interview, tip for anybody out there. like the theme of going back, right, is definitely in there. You know, the fact that Augusto was missing his family makes sense and comes through. Without getting into heavy spoiler territory, I suppose, you know, there is, to the degree that the game has fears in it, right? I wouldn't say it's a mm-hmm. horror game or anything like that, but to the degree that it's tense, part of the tension is about, you know, being too late, you know, too late to block an attack, but also maybe that, you know, like there's actual tension about the person you're rescuing maybe not being rescuable anymore, potentially. So I was just going to say, you know, in that sense, you know, the idea of going back to an earlier form of RPG that was maybe a little bit less kind or didn't have all the rough edges sanded off gels kind of well with the idea of, you know, anxiety about being apart from people you care about.
Man, that's a really good one. It's a great thesis. I like your thesis way better. we're going to start using that one.
By all means, feel free. Hey, you took the time to talk to me while you're replatforming. You can, any of this you want to blurb, please, by all means, blurb away.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I if you don't feel like it's a reach, I sure don't. Cause that really comes through. I mean, like it's kind of a uniquely tense game, you know, it's, The world is dark, right? And there are kind of NPCs telling you that your quest is hopeless and you should turn back and all that stuff, which, is great, and I love that device because, you know, it paints the picture of a world, but it makes you feel like, well, I'm the one hero who's saying no to that, and you know, screw you, two-headed eyeless crow. I'm gonna show you, you know, that I can't be put back and all that.
Yeah,
it's great. It's a really cool device, but it, because there's a propulsion to go with sort of the darkness of the world, it never feels oppressive. You know, like, you never genuinely feel like giving up, or at least I don't. It feels like a monstrous world that's very much worth, like, propelling yourself through.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm glad. Yeah, I mean, we would hate it if people felt too over, you know, too stressed out or too much anxiety, or it just seemed too dark. And I think one of our strategies, at least from an artistic point of view, was to go with these really bright colors. So in the game, we use this interesting bright color palette. And I think a part of that, well, I know a part of using that was for us to add some lightness to somewhat of a dark, dreary world. And so we did a few other things to address that, but at least to not feel too, you know, too depressing for people or too overbearing. That was definitely a strategy, was try to lighten it up as much as we could.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's I didn't mean to suggest that I didn't mean that I assumed you were trying to make it oppressive and unwelcoming, but there is a school of game design that is if not, even if it doesn't embrace that reaction, it welcomes it or invites it or lets it be possible. I'm thinking specifically of, like, you know, like Russian games have a very big strain of this. You know, if you're thinking about Pathologic or you're thinking about Metro, these are games where, you know, if you don't have an air tank, then 10 hours later you can end up screwed and you couldn't have known that until right then, right? I guess I meant it isn't like that. You know what I mean? It isn't dark or it isn't desperate in the way that those games can be dark and desperate. It's more just that you really do have a constant sense of tension and sort of tonal distress and, again, strangeness. Which, again, is more like those old RPGs where your mind had to fill in the blanks because the graphics were minimal. You know, and in this case, the graphics are not minimal. They're quite lush, but it does that same thing where it's imagination candy, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we wanted to create something that was, you know, that made people wonder and kind of keep on guessing what the world actually was. So, yeah, I like to think we achieved that to a certain degree.
Yeah, I would say you definitely did. You definitely did. So correct me if I'm wrong here, but you've done relatively few interviews. When I was trying to get ready for this, I found a few things, and a large number of them were about Guacamelee, and most of them sort of asked, like, a platformer about a luchador. That's crazy. Why'd you do that? And didn't go much deeper than that. So I guess, what do you wish people would ask you about this game, that game, or just Drinkbox in general? Because you guys at this point have a really interesting variety of output, and I feel like I'd like to know what makes you guys tick. You know, what do you wish people would ask you about your games?
Oh man, that's a great question. You know, it's yeah, I feel I've done so many interviews about Guac. But it's true. It is interesting, actually, when you do a lot of interviews, you start to get the same, well, you don't get the same questions all the time, but the same flavor, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. I think as a developer.
And that's where it ends. So there you go. He basically talks a little bit there, or he did in the lost chunk of this, about how as a developer and also as someone who is sort of in charge of the project, he sort of wants to talk about the whole. He wants to talk about each person's contribution, but sort of how the game comes out, which I think he did, right? He talked a little bit about Augusto's inspiration and how that stuff comes from missing his family and where that's the tone that underpins the game. I think all that stuff comes across really successfully, so definitely check it out. Severed is now out on PlayStation Vita, which no one will remember or care about, I guess, but then also iOS, 3DS, and Wii U. And I've been playing it on the Wii U. It feels just as good as Chris was sort of describing. I'm a fan. Give it a go. It's, like I say, it's very successful in terms of what it means to do in terms of tone, but it also just does a lot of mechanically interesting stuff. So if you're the kind of player who wonders why I talk about tone so much, there'll still be a lot to love about it. And if you are that kind of player, stay tuned, because there's more interesting talk on that topic coming up, and hopefully you can get some closure to the other sorts of points of view available in that argument. And, you know, feel free to get in touch with us. Twitter, comments on this, and so on, and so on, and so on. You may have noticed that this is the same show. You have come come to know, love, or perhaps be indifferent to. I'm still talking to fascinating people about strange lines of questioning and conversation. Soon Lucio will be back, and we will wonder whether we're old we are, and hash out the corners of, pop and geek culture arcana. That's all coming. Lots more to come. Thank you, as always, for tuning in, and thanks again to Chris McQuinn for joining me for this episode. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere else podcasts are, or if you have a bunch of monster parts, you can transmogrify them into an episode of this podcast. Or go to etao.wordpress.com.